My name is Bonnie Landry. I'd like to welcome you to my podcast with my co-hosts, Elizabeth and Christina, where we explore the questions about homeschooling and family life and how we can make joy normal.
Good afternoon, Elizabeth.
Hello.
You enjoying the sunshine?
Yes. Yes. It's been so cooler here, too.
Okay. Yeah, we've had a kind of a funny summer. Just not been as warm as usual, and that's kind of a bummer. So the gardens are sort of slow and slow to get started. So, but the next week is supposed to be beautiful. So that leads me to the question I wanted to start with today. Simply, what is your favorite season and why?
It's a good question. And it's one, that's why I'm in the Midwest, because I love all the seasons. I was just telling my husband this the other day. Where it's like, God really knows what he's doing when he lets you anticipate, right? So I'm fully enjoying summer right now and all the flowers and, you know, popsicles and being outside and going to the beach and stuff. But I'm looking forward to the fall, where it's like the crisper season and warm drinks and all that. And
yeah,
winter, specifically Christmas time, is probably my absolute favorite.
Right.
Just because I love going to get our Christmas tree, even if it's like 30 degrees and we're all freezing. But I will say winter is long here, and I do get tired of it by March or April.
Yeah.
It's pretty gross.
For sure. It's interesting. That's nice, though, because when you can kind of be in the moment and experience what you're experiencing, and that really does make the most of all the seasons, because I find that, too. Like, I'm always, by the end of the school year, I'm always ready, like, okay, I'm so looking forward to summer and you know, all the things. But by the end of summer, I'm thinking, I want to get back into a routine. I want the nice, cool weather, all of that stuff, too, right?
Yeah, totally. So I feel kind of lame in saying I like them all, but it's true.
No, it's good. Good. That's living in the moment. Yes. I love heat, though. I will say that. I really love heat. So I'm dying for it to actually get warm here. So that'd be nice.
Yeah. Well, and I also don't love air conditioning. You know, like, I like being cool and comfortable when I go to bed, but I freeze. And so I find that it's too hot to not have the air conditioning on. But then I feel too cold, so I go outside to warm up.
Right. Good idea. Yeah, AC can be a bit edgy. So you had some questions.
Yeah. So I would love to get your input on organization. I think we've talked a little bit about it, and we've had guests in the past. But as I'm trying to kind of lesson plan and figure out this next school year, I'm finding really hard time getting organized and kind of figuring out, you know, if I get a planner, what am I going to put in it and how far in advance should I plan? And so if you could talk a little bit about that and what you do, that'd be great.
Sure. Yeah. So I don't plan very much. From a very pragmatic point of view, I have an episode coming up that's all about, which our listeners will have already heard, but where I talk very specifically about the nuts and bolts of kind of planning. But in terms of the process that I go through, basically for me, with all those years of, you know, little kids in the house and whatnot, how I always started at the beginning of summer, I always started with thinking about what was going on in my life right now. And so I think there's a very sort of philosophical side to planning that can't be ignored, because I think that's really where we should start. Even things like, okay, what did I really like about the past year? What do I really like about the way my household is running? What wasn't working very well? What would I like to see be able to accomplish more in what areas? That we sort of need to take some philosophical assessment time. How did the school year go? What worked and what didn't work? How does certain areas of my house flow? What worked, what didn't work? How can I tweak it? How can I make it work better? And I think that those are such important questions to start with in the terms of what you're going to do for next year. Because to me, the things that are the fundamental things, we could plan and plan and plan. We could plan out every day of our life for the next 2 years in terms of what we want to do during the day. But the things that really make the doing happen are keeping our stress levels low, keeping our children happy, keeping our some order in our life, you know, finding ways to stay, you know, pretty caught up on the things that are going on in your life, having your life flow with a lovely sense of rhythm and order, and that, you know, there's, you can work through the issues that come up, and that you're not always putting out brush fires, right? And that's, we operate often as human beings, we tend to operate on the kind of the band-aid systems, like, okay, I'm just going to slap a thing here because I just can't deal with that anymore. I'm just going to slap a thing here and slap a thing here. And I think that we assess and think less about the problems rather than actually sort of dealing with them, right? And finding ways that we can, the things can flow better. So I spent a pretty good chunk of time thinking about how my household flows, okay? Right from sort of morning routine, how meals flow, how laundry flows, how things work and what's not working. And so to me, that's just such an important piece of the puzzle to look at before we start looking is like, okay, what time am I going to do math, right? What slot can I fit this into? That's how I would always spend some of the time in my summer, just kind of thinking about things. You know, for me, laying in the sun, you know, thinking about things, or having a glass of wine and thinking about things. How could that work better? Okay, that was, why did I feel rushed all the time? You know, what was that all about? Oh, okay, well, I was never caught up in laundry, I was never caught up in dishes. Okay, so how can I deal with those things so that education can happen more organically, more freely, more beautifully, you know, because there's less chaos in the house, right? So sort of from that point, once I decide, okay, is there anything I need to tweak? And also, here's another consideration that I think is really important. Okay, I'm having a baby in November. I've got a two-year-old who's really, really busy. I've got a five-year-old who would like to sit down and do some schoolwork. I've got a seven-year-old who couldn't care less. I've got a 10-year-old who really needs to be challenged more in different areas. What am I dealing with, right? In terms of my actual people that I have in my house, what am I dealing with and how am I going to deal with that more effectively? Because, you know, I'm really, really tired when I'm pregnant and, you know, or I'm really, really tired postpartum. So how am I going to deal with that? How do I minimize? How do I work through that problem? Or the toddler who just destroys everything. How am I going to work through that so that we can have some productivity in our day, so we can have some peace and calm in our day? Does it mean working around naps? Does it mean working out a time schedule with my husband so that we can, you know, maybe he can take a break in the middle of the day for an hour so I could work with the kids, and then he could work later if he works from home or something like that, right? We have to sort of creatively think about how we can function. When for years I had Albert and I had kind of a rule of thumb that we lived by, and I said, you know, if you leave for work and I have an empty dishwasher and a shower, I think I could pretty much handle anything, right? But those were the two fundamental things that felt like, this is what I need to feel good and feel like I can cope with the day, right? So for other people, it's going to be different things, but kind of deciding, okay, what are the really absolute basics that we need? So then from that point, depending on the age of your kids, for me, a lot of this was discussion. But, you know, and your kids are probably getting at that age where you're sort of discussing what you're going to do is kind of fun. We would decide, okay, well, what historical period would we like to be looking at this year? What would you like to study for science? You know, now sometimes that's top down. You're going to make that decision and this is what we're doing. But as they get older, it becomes pretty interesting to find out what they would like to learn, right? What would you like to do? How would you like this to roll out? And, you know, maybe you have one child who says, I want to study dinosaurs. And you have another child who says, well, I don't. I want to study the earth. And you could say, okay, you know what? We're going to spend a couple of months on dinosaurs and a couple of months on earth. You know, we cover a lot of science that way. That'll be really interesting. You know, and sort of decide very loosely what we're going to do. For a historical period, I would just pick the period and then pick some really basic resources. For me, that would always start with, you know, 3, 4, half a dozen novels that we wanted to read together. So I would usually have those chosen ahead of time. Sometimes I might come up with something. Oh yeah, I'd like to actually add this novel in. So it might mean that I have to drop another one if I'm, you know, have a limited amount of time that you can read. And then For science too. Okay, well, what resources? You want to do dinosaurs? Okay, well, should we just do that from the encyclopedia? Is there anywhere we could go for a field trip? Is there a natural history museum nearby? What could I do this year to fulfill that very cool idea of studying dinosaurs? And so it would be, so I'd kind of have the big blocks in place, if you know what I mean. Okay, this is what we're going to do. And here's a couple of things I'd really, really love to do. I'd love to read you this eyewitness book, and I'd love to go to a natural history museum that's an hour away, and maybe we would watch some really cool videos on dinosaurs. But then beyond that, I'm going to look for a couple of really good books. I'm going to, you know, then we would read for a few minutes every day, whatever book we chose. So that's kind of the process for me, is to discern what the big blocks are and where I want to put them in. So if I decided that, okay, we're going to do dinosaurs for part of the year and earth sciences for part of the year, then I'd say, okay, well, let's start the year with dinosaurs. And then after Christmas, then we'll do earth sciences, right? And just put the big blocks in. And prior to that, a month or so prior to that, I would probably start looking for the books that I would want. You know, and I'd go through a similar, so the family, kind of the family-oriented type things we'd study, I'd go through that process. With my kids, I'd also be, say, things like math or things are doing more that are one-on-one type subjects. I would think, okay, well, where were you at in math last year? What did you finish last year? Was it too challenging? Was it too easy? Was it too boring, right? Was it sort of hit the mark in terms of challenging you? But, you know, sometimes they'd be like, I hated this program. I don't know. It was so boring or whatever. So, okay, we'll have a look at that. Maybe we need to switch to a different math program, or maybe we need to look at, maybe it was too easy for you. So sort of having those discussions with my kids about how the school year was going to roll out. And again, when your kids are young, you're making those decisions for them. You know, usually the beginning of summer, that would be what I would be spending my time doing, is just thinking a lot about where we were at and discussing with the kids what they were doing, you know, and also, you know, would you like to learn a second language? You know, I think you need to spend more time doing times tables. I think that I'd like to see we were only doing dictation a couple times a week. We need to do that every day. So, you know, how does this look, right? Is that helpful?
Yeah. Although as you're talking, I have more and more questions that are building up. So two that come to mind, the first one might be a shorter answer. Did you have your kids wake up at a certain time, or did you just kind of whenever they were ready to wake up, and, you know, was there, did you kind of time that? I've talked to parents that kind of have different opinions where, oh no, we let them sleep in, or no, they get up at this time during the school year. And you know, so what did you guys do?
Right. Yeah, that's a great question. So sort of both and to some degree, like I found when my little kids were young, when I only had young kids, I mean, they're up early, everybody's up early. So just, it was not really an issue. And for my part, you know, I wanted I was always kind of insomniac. So I wanted to get as much sleep as I could. So I would actually sleep until the baby was awake. And so if the older kids got up, they would just, you know, get up and putter around the house or read a book or whatever. And they might come in and see me or whatever, but I would often lay in bed, which wasn't very late, you know, later, but maybe 7 or something like that, or 7:15, by the time, you know, the littlest nursling woke up, sort of thing. And only because I was often, you know, pretty exhausted. I mean, first of all, having little kids is just exhausting, but I didn't sleep well.
Right. I also love that you called the littlest one a nursling. That's so cute.
I know. Isn't that a great word? Yes. I love that.
I'm coining that now.
Okay. My nursling. I found in the young years, the kids weren't, they were waking up early enough. It was just a non-issue, right? As they got to be teenagers, then some of the kids would start sleeping in quite late. That was an important time to let them get sleep, I felt. And so there was some negotiation. So I would say, you know what, I think it's really important that you sleep in. You can't sleep till 10, you know, because I want to get the day started. You can do that on the weekends if you want. If you don't have anything else, you know, if you don't have soccer or whatever, you can do that on the weekends. But it would be, you know, we have to negotiate here. What time is going to work for you? So, you know, I might say, depending on the kid, you know, sort of, well, how about if I get you up at 8:30? you know, or 9 o'clock or whatever, but it would probably never be later than 9. But I'd be all ready to go. And when that older person woke up, I would, breakfast would be ready and we would sit down and start our day. Depending on the phase of life that we were at, we were deciding to wake up, but not kind of a hard and fast thing, right? And if we were out late the night before, then I would let the kids sleep, because to me, that's okay. Well, I'm responsible for that. If I keep my kids up till 10 or 11 at night, it's a guarantee that getting them up at 7 isn't going to be prudent, right? One of the things, just on this topic of sort of, you know, getting up and morning and all that. So you've heard me say this before, but I always got our, like our breakfast, I always had things ready the night before. So right after dinner, I would usually, you know, after we'd clean up and all that, I would put out the breakfast stuff, know what I was going to have for breakfast, have the bowls and spoons out or whatever, have the, you know, whatever books on the table that we were going to be reading, so that it was smooth. I wasn't trying to, with my toddler on one arm and went thinking, oh my gosh, where is the everything? Trying to do that in the morning when everybody else is sort of waking up and having needs in some way. So that was really nice, because what it led to, having that ready and having that sort of format, first of all, it's really conducive to actually sitting down together, which was important to me. And it's not to everybody. That wouldn't be a goal. But it was important to me. I liked sitting down at breakfast and lunch. That's when I read to my kids. But it also led to that in the morning, I wasn't rushing around trying to tidy up the kitchen. That was already done. And so often I was sitting in the living room with the nursling. And so the little kids would often just come and sort of sit on my lap, and I'd read stories and whatnot to them in the morning, because I wasn't feeling frazzled and whatnot. So that's often where we'd be first thing when people started waking up. And so that's kind of, I don't know, I feel like that's kind of a nice picture for kids to wake up to. You know, mom's in the living room in the rocking chair nursing the baby and, you know, reading a story to the toddler or whatever. That seems to me like kind of a pleasant way to start the day, right? Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think for different people too, like some people, you know, both my daughters, actually, they need to eat something high protein, you know, a big breakfast. I don't need that. I never have. I kind of eat later in the day. But for people that need that, and that's an important part of their functioning, then obviously one of the things you have to first do is take care of your breakfast, right? And so maybe even for a person who needs that, doing that the night before might be really helpful. It's like, I'm going to eat, then I can read to my kids, then I can, you know, whatever it is I need to do first, but I've taken care of myself first.
We're struggling right now because my almost 1-year-old is just like only wants me most of the time. And it's like, she needs to be held. And it makes it really hard to one arm try and cook or prep dinner or, you know, breakfast or whatever it is. So luckily my older two boys are at an age where they can make stuff, you know, for everybody. Not that they do. They usually just help themselves.
Yeah.
And then
it's nice to have stuff that kids can help themselves to, for sure. So they're not getting cranky or whatever. Have you tried, this only came to my mind because recently, like last week, I had one of our listeners contact me and say, did you ever do sort of housework and stuff like that with your baby in a backpack? And I did that for years, like the hiking style backpack, a really, really good one. And I would pop, you know, whatever, you know, older infant or toddler in the backpack so I could get things done around the kitchen whenever I needed to, sort of thing. And then, you know, once I had teenagers and stuff, you know, there was always somebody to hold the baby or whatever. But that stood me in good stead for years because it just, you know, then they're happy and they were looking over my shoulder, but they couldn't get into anything.
Yeah, I've tried that.
And not hot, like in a snuggly or carrier, a front carrier, you know, you're trying to cook and stuff like that.
Right, right. So safe. I have one of those carriers that I could also wear her on my back. And sometimes she's okay with it, but she likes to reach her hand all the way down my shirt. And so she can't do
that. Well, it's interesting. You got to admit, it's interesting.
That's right. But, I mean, when she's on my back, she can't do that and she gets frustrated. And But yes, I have done that in the past just to get, you know, laundry done or something really quick, hands-free. I say this with positivity. This is a challenge. My fifth child is a wonderful challenge to motherhood because there's so many things on my plate to do, and she has not really let me do those things. So I feel all scatterbrained because I have like months of things piled up, but... I mean, I'm exaggerating. My house is decently clean. Right. So the other question I had was, it had to do with, so let's say any of our listeners who go more curriculum based, but they want to use it more as a guide, not a rigid, I'm going to follow this, this, and this. What would that look like? Like I've looked at Mother of Divine Grace in the past and I really like how they structure their, like history.
Right.
And so they give lists of books. And I've kind of always wondered, do you do it in that order that they, on their syllabus, they tell you, or can you just kind of, well, this month we're going to read about, Clara Barton, mm-hmm. But then we're going to go and read about somebody else who came before her in history,
Yeah, that's a really good question. So I think that, first of all, when we're looking at curriculum, the most important thing, I mean, there's some beautiful curriculum out there. There's some well-designed curriculum out there. Will it suit your family and all the people in your family at the exact right moment or age or whatever? Probably not. It might, there might be some marks that line up or whatever. And the important thing to remember about curriculum is that you can't let it own you, right? And you can't get frustrated when it's not rolling out on the same timeline that they have produced it in. That's just somebody's best guess, and it's sometimes a well-informed guess. It's sometimes based on their own homeschooling experience. There's lots of reasons for the guess, but they're not in your family. And so it's not possible that somebody else could produce a curriculum that's ideal for your family, right? There's just too many moving parts. And so if you look at all curriculum, is that these are suggestions. I'm going to just take math curriculum for a moment because I think this is important to address. That say, for example, there's an MCP or Bob Jones, whatever, math workbook for your grade 3, okay? So some of it will be perfect for your grade 3, probably. Okay. Some of it will be exactly right on. Some of it will be stuff they've already learned. Some of it might be too challenging. Some of it might just be boring. Some of it might just be not your kid's style of learning, right? And so if we look at that and we think, oh no, they're still on page 19 and we should be on page 30. This is going very badly. Or they don't want to do page 18 to 20 because they already know that and it's too boring, or they don't like coloring, or they don't like whatever. They want to skip to the next chapter because it looks more interesting. Somebody's just taken their best guess at how this should roll out for a child. And it's not even a real child. It's an archetypal child, right? So it's a child that is like a type of grade 3, who may be male and may be female in the author's mind. We don't know because things are very different with boys and girls, or they may be neurotypical, or they may be neurodivergent, or whatever. They there's a lot of things, and they're sort of aiming for kind of some sort of average. And so the person has aimed, presumably the person has aimed to provide a really good basis for grade 3 math. But that doesn't mean it's the perfect way to do grade 3 math. The only perfect way to do grade 3 math with your child is what your child needs, right? And the steps forward that they need to take at this exact moment. So all curriculum is like that. Curriculum can be a great resource for us. It can be a great place to draw from get ideas, to do activities, all of that. But we can't let it own us, right? We have to be in charge of the curriculum as opposed to running our life by it, right? You just drive yourself nuts. And I've known so many people over the years who buy one curriculum 1 year and they think, okay, this is perfect. This looks perfect. They do it with a year. By the end of the year, oh, that was stupid. That did not work for our family. I hated that curriculum. They put it in their basement. The next year, they get another curriculum. This is going to be ideal. I got all the parts that the other one lacked. Okay, so I'm going to try this. By the end of the year, they're tired of it. And people will have, you know, 8 or 10 boxes of curricula in their basement because they're trying to find something perfect for their family. The problem is the where we place the appropriateness of ownership in the curriculum, that it just can't own you. So this, yeah, really important. So, you know, go through it. You could pre-decide, okay, I know my kids are going to like this, this, and this, and I know they need this, this, and this. So we're going to do these parts. Or you could just let it roll out and sort of take it a chapter at a time or a segment at a time and think, okay, I could really use a lot of these resources, but I don't think I can do it in a month. I think this is going to take 3 months. So take 3 months. You know, if you think that's what your kids are really interested in and this would be a really, really good study, just take the time that you need and don't be on someone else's timetable.
Awesome. Well, that's all the questions I have.
Okay. Well, we were going to keep it short today, so that's perfect. Thank you so much for joining me. Those are great questions.
Thanks. Thanks for answering.
Yeah. So we'll connect next week, and God bless. Have a great week.
Thanks. You too.